Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
I told you. Benny. Bring me everyone.
What do you mean everyone?
Everyone!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pod Shots. I'm your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 1994 film Leon, The Professional. Written and directed by Luc Besson, the film stars Jean Reno, Natalie Portman, and Gary Oldman. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, Mr. David A. Price.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. Super excited to have the one and only DAP on here with me. Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. So, David, let's do a little 11 o'clock comic swipe and do a little drink roll call. What do you have for me?
Perfect. I am sipping on some Maker's Mark with a nice ice sphere inside the glass.
Ooh, not an ice cube.
Not an ice cube.
That's right. You don't want to water that shit down. I figured this is about an Italian man. Who's a hitman? I better go with a little wine.
I see where you're going.
So this is something I'd let alone not ever had, but I'd never heard of it before. But it's called Mixed Up, and it is a red wine blend. It is a 2012. And the little description is like this, and it is hard to read because it is black and is like gray writing on black, which is a terrible idea. But it says, puzzled about what to pour, the search for the perfect red blend is over. Mixed Up Red offers luscious black cherry and berry flavors, toasty vanilla, and spice on the palate that lead to a plush, lingering finish. Problem solved. And so it's a Napa Valley California wine from 2012, and it is it's a little thin, so it's a little Pinot Noir like. It doesn't have a lot of legs to it, so it's good, but it's more of your drinking wine. It's not a
sure,
you know, it's not a like a Petite Sirah or something.
Surprisingly, neither one of us are drinking milk.
That's true. We probably should have done that.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a lot of, you know, the way that I drink while I'm talking, it's a lot of milk.
Yeah. And I think there'd be some for anybody drinking along with us. If they are lactose intolerant, it would not make for good radio.
Mm-mm. No, it would not. No, it would not. All right. Well, with that, I think we're ready to begin our discussion on Leon, The Professional.
Let's talk business. This guy comes to town every Tuesday. Are you free Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm free Tuesday.
You can't stop what you can't see.
This guy came from the outside. He was a pro. He was fast.
In the art of the kill, Leon was the master.
Somebody's coming up. Somebody's serious.
He never missed a hit. He never got caught.
You're indestructible. Bullets slide off you. You play with them.
And above all else, he never had a reason to care. Until now.
I like these calm little moments before the storm.
My family was shot down by DEA officers.
Three kids here. One of them is missing. Find her.
Please open the door. Please.
From the director of La Femme Nikita.
If you don't help me, I'll die tonight. I can feel it.
An innocent girl with no one else to turn to.
What exactly do you do for a living?
Cleaner.
You mean you're a hitman? Cool.
A perfect assassin.
I need you to help me, Leon. I want to get those dirtbags who killed my brother.
With someone to finally believe in.
Change ankle. Remember that, Leon.
I will.
They're about to come face to face with the cop who's crossed the line.
Bring me everyone.
You mean everyone?
Everyone!
Oh,
And the IMDb plot synopsis is terrible, so I'm going with the plot synopsis over on Amazon. And it is also not great, so I kind of edited and made the best out of it that I could. But it says...
Because depending on... a lot of the Amazon reviews can kind of... if you're looking up like a book, they'll tell you this refers to the hardcover version of... Is this actually... a review of Leon the Professional or the first American version of the Professional?
It was just, it was the, from Amazon itself talking about the Blu-ray.
Okay.
So that it has both. Okay. So,
yes. All right.
Yeah. So it says, calling himself a cleaner, the mysterious Leon is New York's top hitman. When his next door neighbors are murdered, Leon becomes an unwilling guardian of the family's sole survivor, a 12-year-old Matilda. But Matilda doesn't want protection. She wants revenge. Training her in the deadly tricks of his trade, Leon helps track the psychotic agent who murdered her family. And that is as good as I could find, Mr. Price. A lot of them were, which she seems to like, all right. You know, like it would have little commentaries that were just awful like that in there. And I was like, good Lord.
Oh, what do you think?
You know, like here's the IMDb one, just to show you how not good this is. This is one sentence, and here this is how this goes. After her father and little brother are killed by her father's employees, the 12-year-old daughter of a drug dealer is forced to take refuge in the house of a professional murderer who, by her request, teaches her the methods of a job so she can take on her revenge from the corrupted DEA agent who ruined her life by killing her brother out of no reason, actually. Or of no actual reason. One sentence.
Wow.
Terrible.
What long-ass, drawn-out romance. Yeah, okay. Not good.
And this is the sort of thing I'm going to have to live with now for the rest of my life, being an English teacher. So.
Oh, God. Yeah, you're right.
So, okay. Well, let's get into the actual film, which is much better than those reviews. Tell me about you and your history with this movie. When did you come across The Professional?
I came across The Professional when I was working at... I was working at CompUSA and I would, that's where I pretty much watched a lot of, more popular movies for the first time. The Professional, U.S. Marshals, Armageddon. It can go on for a while. So, because our discount was, cost plus 10. So I scored a lot not all so good movies, but for the most part, I was finally able to watch movies that other people had seen, like, you know, that have been out for a while.
Sure. And, playing catch up, right?
Yes, a little bit. And, so I had the DVD player and so this was an old, actually, and Stargate, the first Stargate was one of these first movies. And it is one of, I pretty much refer to it as one of the first DVDs because even though it is only a DVD and the only special feature is a trailer, you actually have to flip the disc over for the other half of the DVD movie. Not like it's a Blu-ray where it doesn't all fit on one side. This is a DVD. It's like the size of a CD.
But... Yeah, and it's only 110 minutes, so this is not The Hobbit.
No. So the technology was still in its infancy. But so I saw The Professional first, and I was... I was familiar with Besson because, I heard of The Fifth Element and then a little later The Transporter, which is sadly a PG-13 movie, but The Professional was it kind of introduced me to Jean Reno. Sure. I was a fan of Danny Aiello, so to see him in this little bit part as Leon's handler, I liked that. Gary Oldman just blew me away.
Yeah,
and,
Gary Oldman's something.
It's crazy to think of this as the same dude as Sirius Black or even Jim Gordon. So yeah. it's nuts. But and Natalie Portman, who really wasn't a blip on my radar at this time.
Oh, you hadn't seen Beautiful Girls?
I did not.
Oh, have you seen that yet? Sidebar, I remember you and Jason talking about
that. Yeah, no, and I still haven't.
That's really good. That was one of those where I wanted to jump through the podcast and be like, oh, it is very good.
I'll see if it's streaming somewhere, but
It came out 2 years later. It's it's one of those just real small stories, real like just comfortable. It'll make you laugh, but there's no, it's nothing like this to where there's a big overarching story. Just a nice little, that's cute. That's a good movie.
We might need it after a few things we've been watching this the past few days.
There you go. You've been watching some long stuff today,
right? We've been watching some long stuff, and we've been watching some little bit of the dark stuff. I mean, with dark television shows, not just movies. But
we're going to watch that long stuff tomorrow that you watched today.
Oh. I was telling Jason, it didn't give me – I didn't get them feels that I got after watching The Return of the King, but it was still a, I'm looking forward to the extended Blu-ray in a few months. We have all of the extended cuts and I think this will actually benefit from that. There were some things that, felt a little rushed as I'm watching. It's still 2.5 hours, but it's,
I saw Scotty didn't care much for it, which is interesting because the more serious it got, the more I liked it, and he felt opposite of that.
Mm.
So I was like, well, we'll see. We'll see what I think. I could be on the, I could be the outlier who enjoys it, but, it seems like a lot of, okay, I've had my fill has been the general reaction to it.
See, with me, it's bittersweet because it's,
yeah, last one.
It's, and a lot of people are like, oh, you don't think they're going to mind anything more? It's Peter Jackson's last directorial directing of these books. So that's where I think it's over.
You got to give me that Silmarillion, baby.
That's what, people are like, oh, but so if he produces or whatever, that's fine. But these six were what I was into and so they're done. But,
that's a very long sidebar.
Yeah, a little bit. So I was late to the party with the professional. Okay. It's definitely something that, if somebody who hasn't seen it, I do recommend it. I've lived most of my life not in New York where Leon was based out of, but it's a movie that felt familiar because I'm used to these areas and, it just,
you didn't live in Little Italy?
I did not live in Little Italy. Okay. I didn't, my dad worked in Harlem, but I didn't live there. So there are a lot of places when I'm watching TV or movies and something's happening in New York for them. And normally, in any movie or TV show, if they're doing something in New York, you can usually see Norman Thomas High School, which is where my wife went to high school, and she kind of always knows where they're filming based on which side of the building, you can see the high school, but, it's definitely one of my favorite movies, and it's self-contained. Everything you need to know is right in here. Where it goes from here is, it's up to you, but there is a depending on which version you see, there is definitely a beginning. We're catching it at a certain point in our cleaner's life, but it's, even though it's called Leon the Professional, it's Matilda's story.
It's absolutely Matilda's story. That's something that I thought was really interesting, that the title of the movie internationally and in the extended version is Leon. It's not The Professional, right? For the US version, it's The Professional. So, now it's kind of known as both, as the combination there. And for me, I came across this probably in the late 90s. So I wasn't right on top of it, but it wasn't too long ago or too long after it came out. And I remember seeing it and I was in college and I was taking a creative writing class. And so I saw this and wrote a short story called Matilda. And it was about Matilda after the movie, right?
A little fan fiction on.
Yeah. A little. Oh yeah. Absolutely. And that was the beginning of a whole, like, well, why don't I write sequels to this? And I was like, oh my God. You look at it now and you're like, oh, how embarrassing. But, you know, in college, I was like, oh, this is the shit. This is so good. But, so, you know, I was really, struck by the film. And I think that I was at the point in my life where in college, I was really into the very over the top Gary Oldman performance. And I was like, oh yeah, he's so crazy. That's so cool. You know, and oh, Leon is all stealthy and quiet and he's such a badass, all this. And when I watch it now, I still like a lot of those same things, but I like them for a lot different reasons. And this is something that you had mentioned to me before we started recording, to where the lens is a little different now. And yeah. I watch it and it's much more for me about, the relationships between the two main characters than it is the deaths and, oh, isn't that cool how he hit her down the electrical duct or whatever it is. And, you know, it's less about the flashbang now for me than it is about the way that Jean Reno is playing Leon, to where he's playing him a little debilitated.
Yes. Yeah. You know? Yeah. When we were watching it recently, my wife is she's a little concerned and a little, I guess, put off by, and here's a grown ass man talking to this little girl. I mean, not a young woman, not a younger, a little girl. And, you know, she's talking about love and loving him and it's something that he should have just, you know, he's talking to her as if she is an adult or mm-hmm. as if she has some years on her and she doesn't. And, it kind of, when you think about it that way, or when you look at it from that perspective, you do kind of think that maybe Leon is a little stunted mentally and there's just, you know, he has the job he's doing, you know, that's not something that, a normal average functioning person can probably pull off on a day to day basis. Yeah. He has a job of taking people out. He's good at it, but when he now has to be around someone and have a conversation with someone other than his houseplant, that's when the light kind of shines on the type of person he is. And specifically his mentally and emotionally and how, just how mature he actually is. And it definitely, spins, it puts it in a different perspective.
Yeah. I want to go ahead and keep on with this before jumping back and talking about some of the shots that I think are interesting and some of that sort of thing is, what do you think that the sexual tension adds, or the, you know, attempt at sexual tension or the idea that it's even there? What do you think that adds to the movie? You know, like, what would be the point of having that in there?
Because they don't follow through. If they follow through with it, it would have been a completely different movie and it would have going down an avenue you don't need.
Yeah,
to
because
see.
Then you're talking about a rapist who's also a hitman,
right?
And then you're like, well, why the fuck would I be cheering for this guy?
That's absolutely right. You know, he's smart enough to reel back a bit, but it's you know, there are definitely other ways he could have handled that, and I'm glad we don't get anything more than what we had. And obviously, I mean, he does care for her because he goes after her and he rescues her. And, so he does feel something, but, thankfully it's not what she wants him to feel for her. I definitely, you know, for years, I just thought of it as a father daughter thing. Whereas mm-hmm. obviously for her, it's always been something more, but, you know, it's not a brother sister thing. Mm-hmm. And I've just viewed it as father daughter. And when you watch it and really watch it and you watch the full version, the real,
yeah, the extended version, right.
It's, you know, he does tell her, he explains, you know, what he was doing before he came mm-hmm. to America and why he can't do it. And, but when he's telling her this, it's almost like he's he's apologizing, or, you know, as if somebody who can't perform because it's, and it's like, and it's like, dude, you're really kind of just, you're harshing my mellow. And, you know, I want to root for you and I want to go somewhere else with this movie, but you're really kind of making it difficult right now.
Yeah. You know, that's what I love about it though. I think that that's what makes it interesting is there is the unwanted sexual tension as an audience member, right? You're like, ah, what are you doing? Like, what is going on? Like, this is making me feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
And it's clearly intentional, right? It's not like Luc Besson is a Roman Polanski style guy.
You're right.
You know, I mean, he realizes this is going to make you feel uncomfortable. And so what's nice is it's not portraying him as this white knight who's, you know, Robin Hooding, you know, or he's not just taking out all these terrible people. Like, he's not a good person in a lot of ways.
Right.
You know, and so I like the fact that, yes, he saves her, but he's apologizing for not being able to be there emotionally and sexually for her. You know, he's uncomfortable because he knows that if he lays in the bed, not only does that make him more vulnerable, but who knows what might happen, kind of a situation.
Yeah.
You know, it is sort of refreshing to be like, oh, you know, he's becoming more of a person now that he's got this relationship and he cares for somebody and he's not just this killing machine and going about his day-to-day business. But then at the same time, it's like, well, yeah, he's becoming more of a person, but he's becoming more of a person that's falling in love with a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're like, well, what? So it's just something to wrestle with a little bit in the film. And I think that it stands out because this is not a genre. You know, this is not the sort of film you see a lot of. And I think that it's key that he plays it the way that he does, because if he were to play it, you know, like a Brad Pitt or like a Josh Hartnett or somebody that's supposed to be like a ladies man type, I guess. Right. Josh Hartnett. Wow, that's a fucking
that's in the past, bro. That's
a dated reference. But if he were to be playing it like that, it would come off much worse than if he's playing it like I think he is, where he's a little maybe emotionally handicapped and maybe a little mentally handicapped. So that way it comes off a little bit like, well, he's not sure really what's happening. Like, he's not sure how to handle it. He knows that it's maybe not right, but he's not exactly sure what's going on there. So I thought that was interesting, you know, and I didn't necessarily have a set answer to that question, but I thought that was something that was interesting. What I did want to talk about though, and I'm glad that you brought it up earlier, from being in New York quite often and, you know, from someone that's from Nebraska, it's not like I see these scenes in New York and I'm like, oh, hey, that I know that place. You know, we don't get a lot of film crews in Lincoln. You know, and so except for about Schmidt and Yes Man, I think. But so I do really like that opening through the city, and we have, you know, I don't know if it was just on a truck that's maybe on top of a ladder, or if it's on, because it couldn't be a low flying helicopter, the how low they get to the ground where you're going through the city, and you're just seeing these different shots, and I guess it was a vehicle, and they just studied the lights in New York during this certain stretch and just planned it out to where they could make these shots work and get through the city as fast as they did. But I thought that was something that was really interesting, because you're literally kind of swooping into this character's life, and you're not immediately dropped in. You're kind of more, it's more of like a romantic swoop into this part of the city. You know what I mean? It's not just dropped in there. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is, you know, all of the exteriors were shot in New York, and all of the interiors were all done in France. So I think that that's kind of, I mean, it played as New York to me, you know, and I didn't know if that was just from not being there, or if it was like, you know, I didn't have a reference to 1994 New York. So I was like, I don't know if this plays.
So I think maybe some of, depending on way, it's, that is the interiors, the apartments inside. That definitely, to me, it didn't, it made sense to me, but Renee living in, and we've both lived in apartments most of our lives, but, her mom was a super at an apartment building. So, okay. I mean, she's been inside.
Yeah.
Renee kind of had a sense that the buildings, that the interiors, that the apartments themselves, were off somewhat, at least by New York standards. So, depending on how in the know you are, you may notice some things here and there that are a little amiss. But, and for me, for someone who's also been in New York for most of his life, it made sense because they definitely felt like the small, I mean, when I was in Mount Vernon and my apartment had the small little galley kitchen and I had the one bedroom and the really crappy bathroom. At least I had a bathroom and I wasn't sharing it with the rest of the floor, but the living room was practically non-existent. When I watch Leon, it reminds me of those. Oh God, no, we won't. I don't even know where the hell Peter was living in Spider-Man 2. I wouldn't mind in a place like that, but that, no, I, so yeah, no, I, it, it reminded me of the Mount Vernon apartments, but,
okay.
Now that you say that, because I did not know that the interiors were filmed elsewhere. So that's neat. And that actually shed some light on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's interesting. And the next thing I have written down is, I think that I really enjoy the composition of a couple of the shots at the beginning where they're just looking down through stairs and up through stairs. And it's got that whole circular, appearance. And that's one of the things that I thought looked really good in the movie. And I thought that the film itself looks very good because, like you said, that it's a early DVD. Like, it was a very early print.
Right.
And the Blu-ray that I have, you know, it is still just the one disc and it doesn't have a ton of features really, but it looks really good. I think the film looks very good, especially, you know, it's not showing the prettiest of things, but I think that the shots are really well composed. I really like the way that it looks. And going along with that, I think that the score is something that is not a thing that I recognized the first time I watched it. It was something that, you know, I just was wrapped up into the plot of it all.
Oh, it doesn't stand out to you like the Third Man score?
No. And so it was a thing where I just kind of, you know, ignored it somewhat or didn't notice it, and which I think is a key thing. I'm not huge into the sort of, I guess Spielberg is the best example I can think of off the top of my head where it's forcing you to feel the feels, you know, where it's like, you will feel the feels right here. You know, I'm not a fan of that, even though I like John Williams and he works with a lot with John Williams, but I think that the score here throughout the film is really, really well done. And I really like it specifically when Matilda is first introduced and she's at the top of the steps and she's smoking and she's trying to hide the cigarette and all of that. And it goes from being very serious, with Leon and his first, kills with his first sort of, cleaning, I guess. And it, you know, it goes to her and it's a lot lighter and it's a lot more fanciful and it kind of settles you down into the film a little bit because you open up and it's kind of, you know, tense and he's killing people and this, that, and the other. And then you're kind of like, you're able to relax a bit into the film and you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, she's this troubled kid, whatever. And then you find out what her home life is like. And then you realize the kind of world that you're living in and you're like, holy shit, what is this movie going to be about? Like, everyone is worse than the last.
Yeah.
You know, this is a terrible, terrible situation. But, what did you think of Gary Oldman and his introduction when he is listening to Beethoven? And, you know, it's funny that he was listening to Beethoven because we just recorded an episode, which I think it will be two episodes before this one, with our mutual friend, Mr. Ben Teed on A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, wow.
And Beethoven is heavily involved in that film. And, so we talked a lot about Ludwig von in that. And so here he is again, Beethoven making an appearance through Gary Oldman and his character. So what did you make of that when he's introduced and he's built up and he's finally interrupted, and he starts sniffing Matilda's dad and trying to decipher if he is indeed lying or not.
It set the stage where pretty much any formula that I thought this movie may attempt is going out the window. It reinforced that this was a movie that I could not at the time compare it to anything else. It really was its own thing. If it doesn't matter what other kind of movies I like, what other genres I enjoy watching, I couldn't just follow Leon and say, okay, this is the world I'm in. These are his rules and this is how it's going to play out. And if I thought I was going to be watching a certain type of movie, Oldman kind of threw that out the window for me. Cause they, you know, it's not like Batman and the Joker. They're not two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. They're not arch enemies. It's just, it's you know, unfortunately for Leon, he got sucked into this world and you know, he was happy living his life. And, because of Stansfield, it's he no longer can. And, he really is Oldman it was probably one of the earlier times, that I could watch an actor basically. You see Robert Downey Jr. and you kind of know whether it's Weird Science or Iron Man or Chaplin, you still kind of see Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
You kind of know what kind of actors you're getting. If you're watching a Josh Hartnett movie, you're going to know what kind of character he's going to play.
The most references Josh Hartnett has had in any form of media in like the last 10 years.
No, it's true. I'm going to watch 40 Days and 40 Nights now. but you know, here's a dude who Gary Oldman is. It's like Leo these days, or even Jack Nicholson. If you watch Bow Schmidt.
It's like for me, and I have a huge crush on this actor, but it is like Tom Hardy for me.
Oh, okay.
So every movie I see him in, whether it's Inception, whether it's
Star Trek Nemesis,
Star Trek, not so much that.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, whether I see him as in Inception, in Lawless, in the upcoming Mad Max Fury Road, in a lot of, you know, obviously as Bane, where he's being much different, or in Warrior, which is probably one of my favorite performances from him. And the upcoming Lock, which is a film that Anel and I will be covering soon. So I think that he is like what you're saying about Gary Oldman, to where he's very much a chameleon and you're not sure he doesn't rely on certain ticks.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. Man, he's a guy. I think when he's first there in the headphones and I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. This is going to be some guy that's going to be crazy. It's not just that he's crazy. It's the way that he's crazy, because he just kind of teeters on the line of being in control and being out of control. And he seems like he's got it together. I mean, he's assistant DEA or something like that, assistant district attorney or something.
Yeah, it's like a special offshoot to the DEA. And that was the other thing, because when he pulls up into the DEA building, when he's like, that building doesn't exist. Who'd help put that logo above the door with the DEA? It doesn't say, but yes, it is. It's all, they're drug enforcement agents.
Yeah, and so he, you know, and what I like about it is he has little go-tos, and Leon has his little go-tos to where he's always taking care of the plant. Gary Oldman's always rattling around his little box of drugs.
Yes.
Right. And the way that he takes the drugs is one of the most bizarre and interesting and like scary things. And I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
You know, it almost made me think there was like some sort of like prosthetic or some extra, like something else going on besides him just acting. Cause I was like, God, he's like contorting himself weird. And it makes me feel uncomfortable watching him do that.
Yeah.
Because of the way that he's straining and
cracking his neck. And we got some backstory with Leon, but with Stansfield, we come in cold. We're introduced to him, and even throughout the rest of the movie, we know him as this cop, and he's, whether he has a boss that he needs to answer to, which is why he's got to get collect all the drugs, or whatever his motives are, we know very little about him. He's in charge of his crew, and we don't, if we had gotten a backstory, if we had followed Stansfield for a few days before we meet Matilda's parents, and, you know, there might be some blowback. There might be some, you know, there'd be some inconsistencies. You're like, okay, well, here's this normal by the book guy, but then you find out he's really a corrupt dude. But no, we just know right off the bat. And I think that's helpful to me anyway, where I don't know what this guy does at the end of the day. I don't know if he goes home. I don't know if he's married. You know, it's not the bad lieutenant or anything like that. It's just, this is who he is. He lives in this sphere, and he's, even though he's not who the movie is about, he's still in it up to his neck. And the fact that we don't get to know so much about him helps. At least it does me.
Yeah. I wonder if I would love to see the script for this, because I wonder if it's just, he's just a corrupt guy and there's not much crazy about him.
Like, and all that's Oldman.
Yeah. Like, maybe he's a drug addict or something, but a lot of this is just Oldman taking it to the nth degree because he realizes there isn't a lot on the page. And he, you know, because I know through the IMDb trivia, which is always right, just like Wikipedia, it says that, you know, that in that scene where he's sniffing Matilda's dad, that the reaction, that's not scripted, it wasn't planned. And so the actor's reaction to being uncomfortable was very much just a...
That's awesome.
Like, what is he doing? Like, is this for real? Like, are we recording? Like, what?
Oh, then I bet everyone has to be improvised also.
I would imagine.
Because that's just that. My brother and I will quote that, and I mean, there are just so many. Same thing with the Mickey Mouse bullshit. It's just there are a hell of a lot more things to quote Stansfield's character than pretty much anything else in the movie. And what's strange is that Andrew Shaw, my friend in Australia, he was reading, I think it was Taskmaster, the Taskmaster mini by Fred Van Lente, and he had no idea that there's a panel where Taskmaster screams everyone.
Bring me everyone.
And he has and Andrew had no clue. And then I posted a GIF months later with Stansfield and with the subtitles, and he was like, wait, so that's where that's from? And he had no clue. And then Valenti even chimes in on Twitter, and he goes, yeah, that's where I clipped it from. And it's just so, I mean, it opened up Andrew's eyes. I think he finally saw the movie, but, again, yeah,
that was also an improv. That was, he was originally just saying that matter of fact.
Okay.
And then they said that he was just fucking around with Luc Besson and was like, well, I'm just going to say this one crazy. And he said it crazy, and he told the sound guy, this is again, according to IMDb, he told the sound guy to take his headphones out. And so then he just screams it.
That's awesome.
And then that's the bring me everyone that the movie is known for in a lot of circles for that little
clip. Just that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah. So another one of the things that I wanted to get back to is, what do you think about the almost death of Matilda, where Leon almost kills her right towards the beginning? Because I watched that this time and I clearly know it's not going to happen, but I found myself this time like with clenched fists going, oh shit, because he's so close to doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and it almost makes sense, because it's like, well, like you had said, he's happy enough with his life. You know, he doesn't think Danny Aiello is going to fuck him out of all of the money that he owes him, even though he probably will or probably would have, because I don't know that I really trust that he's got all the money socked away for him, right? Well, Tony doesn't get knocked over like a bank.
That's it, not the bank. Yeah, he doesn't charge interest like the bank. Yeah, you know.
And I'm like, oh, this is good. You know, that's a deal where if that storyline kept going, you're like, well, that's going to end badly.
That's it. Yeah. Poor Danny Aiello.
Yeah. So I see that and I'm tense for both of them because I'm like, oh, no, don't, you know, life is so much simpler if he just pulls that trigger for him.
Yes. Yeah. It's, when I was watching it again, it was one of those things where I'm trying to figure out if he's wrestling with it because it's not even about the payment. It's not like, oh, I'm not getting paid to off this little girl, so I'm not going to do it. It's just, yes, his life, he could resume doing what he's doing. He has, he owes her nothing.
And he doesn't know her and doesn't really know her. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. It's just, you know, she's going to, and it's not, I don't think he's smart enough to know that she's going to bring all this trouble down on him, but it's like this little girl has nothing to live for now. Her family's gone. Her brother's gone. It could just be, you know, she'll be out of my hair.
Yeah. And it also could be a mercy killing for her.
That's what I was thinking when I saw it again recently. It's because he's not, I didn't view it as him being a bad guy. And he, obviously he doesn't do it. So you could make the argument that, well, see, I told you he's not a bad guy. He's not doing it because he is a bad guy. He's doing it to move on and not so much himself, but her. This way she just doesn't have to worry about anything anymore. And I think also it's like she's asleep and it's
not going to know what's going on. Right.
Exactly. And it's better for him to do it, a friend in air quotes, than her getting executed in an apartment with everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no story if he does it there, but you think of where their lives would go. Obviously she's dead, but he would just be the same person presumably until he was unsuccessful.
Yeah.
In a cleaning. Yeah. So I think that's interesting. Then we have, you know, she shoots the gun all over the place to try to prove that she's tough. Right. And we have where they move in under the name, under the MacGuffins, which I thought was funny. That's their name. And, you know, they have a little bit of the, you know, it's, what is it? She's registered under her friend's name because she says if things get hot, she'll take the heat, which I think is funny.
Yes.
I like that. And we have, a really strange scene to me because I feel like this has been a few days since the death at least, right? I feel like for them to have had this little bit of a connection and then she shoots out the window and they move into a new place, I felt like it was a couple of days. Now it could have been the same day or later or in, you know, the next day or whatever. But they show a sequence where she goes back to her old home and gets all this money and is standing over her brother's chalk line. And it struck me that it was a crime scene for a long time.
It really did feel like, yes, no, I agree with you.
And I was like, well, the only reason for that is for her to get extra bits of information, right? To find out where Stansfield is. Like, because he says his address at that time.
Right. Yeah. Cause then that's where, you know, the higher ups come in with him.
Yeah. Their
internal affairs. And they just want to get an idea as to, you know, if the shooting was legit and how everything went down. And, so if the timeline definitely did feel a little off, cause yeah, they've moved more than once. And, I mean, the fact that they're kind of wear the same clothes helps with speeding things along, but it's still, I'm watching it and I'm like, why is this still, it's still taped up that why is there an officer in the hallway? I mean, you have it taped up. It's like, what's going on where you still need? So we have, you know, if they cut to another scene saying that, you know, this thing needs to still be on lockdown for, you know, the next couple of weeks or something, but there wasn't anything and it did.
Yeah. It was, that just was, I don't know if that was sloppy writing or just lazy or what it was, but that just struck me as strange, and it didn't take away from my enjoyment of the film, but I was like, God, that seems like that's been a long time.
Now, yeah, that was a little clunky.
You know, it wouldn't have been like I don't need a caption X-Files style that says the next day or something, but the fact that they're wearing the same clothes, I mean, she wears damn near the same outfit the whole time, and Stansfield wears the exact outfit.
Yeah, that beige suit.
Yeah, the beige suit. You should go to Halloween with that, Dap. You'd look good. It'd be a good look for you.
Good look, yeah. I just run around screaming at everyone.
That's right. And you see like 20% of the people getting it, and you'd be like, oh, there's my friends.
Yeah, that's right. You're cool.
Yeah, so, okay, so we have this bit then where he goes out, and he's kind of needs a little space from her. And she goes down to the hotel clerk and says that it's not her dad, that it's her lover.
Lover, yeah.
And again, I was like, why? Like, why is that just because she's mad at him, and so she's trying to get him in trouble, and that's just a thing that a girl that was raised in that environment would do? Or it's like, what's the point other than getting him out of that apartment? You know what I mean? Like, and again, this is one of those where I don't have the answer, so I'm not like saying, all right, say my answer, Daffy. You know, but it's but like, yeah, I just don't know why that's in there other than to, because that really places in the idea that she is spreading it around that she is comfortable with the idea that they would be lovers, you know, or that she's at least had that inkling in her mind to where enough to where she's actually saying the words.
Yeah, to say it out loud though, and it's because she's already been scolded, you know, don't shoot out the window anymore. They've had to leave a place. Now they go to another place, and why she was, and so they're already undercover because she's going to practice her violin and she's getting into Juilliard, and the desk clerk is like, that's fine. I'll put you at the end of the hall. Don't play past 10 o'clock. So they have to, there's all these pretenses. They have to keep it hush hush. So for her to just come downstairs and tell this old man that, you know, we're not, it's just, it really was a little, it kind of put a different light on Matilda, because like you're saying, you know, it's just, it's not like her household was Leave It to Beaver. So it could be par for the course. I mean, her sister was very mean. She only had a brother who
liked to cuddle.
Yes.
That's what's so strange to me is, you know, she talks about her brother. She, you know, doesn't give a shit that the parents are dead. Right.
Right.
She's very clear about that. She doesn't seem to really care that her sister's dead. She says that her brother liked to cuddle. I don't believe she says that she loves her brother. But she does say pretty quickly that she loves Leon. And I was like, well, that's odd. You know, like it was just odd, you know, and there was things in the script where I really like aspects of the script to where, and then there's some other lines where I'm like, oh, okay, this is like a Jeff Loeb Commando or Teen Wolf, to where it's like very cliche and of the genre sort of, you know, like bad action movie lines. You know, there's aspects of both in this film, which I think is interesting because it's, I wrestle with it to where I'm like, oh, I want to love this movie so much. And I really, really like it. You know, I own the Blu-ray and I've seen it several times, but there are little things where I wrestle with it. And I think that makes me like it a little bit more even, you know, to where it's not quite perfect. It's not quite exactly how I think a lot of people would like it to be, with that whole sexual tension that we've already mentioned.
Yeah.
You know? So the next scene, and I believe this is an extended version scene, because it's one of the ones where I was like, wow, I don't really remember that well, but it's when she's getting drunk at the restaurant and they're both drinking champagne.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And she's laughing uncontrollably at points. And she's sort of being like this sexual aggressor to him in public while she's drunk. And God damn, did that make me feel uncomfortable. Because I'm watching it and I'm like, ah, oh, God, just behave yourself. Like, just be good. You know, and I don't know. I just, that part was where I can understand why they clipped a little bit of these out for the American release.
Yeah.
With, you know, the uptight American when it comes to sexuality, right? Like, I can understand why some of those.
But we're fine with all the killing.
Yeah. No problem. Give me all the violence you got. But boy, you better not have any sort of sexual content. But yeah, so that was something to where I was struck by that this time. And, another one of the deleted scenes is, I believe, and I could be wrong again, but when she's sitting at the corner and all the group of boys comes up to her and they said, oh, it's $10 a month to sit.
Oh, there. Yeah, no, that I've seen before. So I don't think that, although maybe I did see it from, but I remember seeing it, but I don't,
yeah, I can't
I'm not remember. Sure if it was the original.
Yeah, I guess I haven't seen it enough to where I remember, but she says, does paying rent mean I have to put up with you guys?
Right.
I say no. Yeah. She goes, well, then go play. I need to think. And I love that.
And it's, which we get just enough because, I mean, it's Matilda being Matilda, but, you know, in any other modern movie, we'd probably get another scene with those boys. Same thing with the boy outside when she was having a cigarette when Leon was talking.
And he goes and warns her. He would come back and she would have to either stand up for herself or she'd get in trouble and then she'd have to defend himself or he would have to come save her. It'd be a whole thing. It'd be a whole subplot.
Yeah.
They would daredevil it is what they would do to where they would have the shitty kids that beat him up, and then, oh, shit, he's Daredevil. Now he comes up and beats up.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, so I would, you know, surprised she didn't use them as target practice.
Yeah, it would have to full circle. instead of that, the wonderful tattooed actor who she gets, and I know that that's the extended version, where she goes and shoots him in person. It's not just the jogger. It's, I don't know what the actor's name is, but he's in a lot of TV. I believe he's been in The Shield and Sons of Anarchy, and he's very distinctive looking to where he's just covered in tattoos. And normally he's bald, but in this is where he was explaining how to shoot him. You know, you shoot him in the gut first, and then you shoot him.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Yeah, the drug guy. Yeah, they burn down his...
they burn his drugs, right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and so that's a thing where that guy's very recognizable. But I was glad that that was in there. I was really pleased to see that sequence, as well as all of the gum on the door and all of the times that it worked and the way that they were able to get into the houses or the rooms or the apartments, whatever. I think all of those add to the idea that she is, you know, learning her craft and slowly becoming like him. And it's not such a sudden turn. And we get the ring trick. We get the setup for the ring trick because, you know, at one point they try to break into a room. It doesn't work.
Yes.
The guy blows the hell out of the front door and they do. He's like, have you heard of the ring trick? And then he throws the grenade in.
Yeah.
Which is the setup for the end of the film.
Yeah.
And it makes me think like, God, why did I not think that that was so weird? Maybe I just thought that was just a one liner in the regular US version of it where he just, you know, says, oh, you know, the ring trick and then, you know, the end of the film happens. So I don't know. I like it better in that instance that it comes full circle, I guess.
Yeah.
So that I kind of like that. One of the things that I like about her is that she is 12, is a little unsure of who she is, but boy, does she has some brass balls.
Oh, yes.
I love her walking into that bathroom. And I'm like, oh man, I don't exactly remember how this is going to happen. I know Stansfield somewhere. I don't remember. And you know, I couldn't remember if he was in the stall just ready, you know, and was just faking her out, but then he's behind the door and I'm like, oh shit, now I remember this.
And I was the exact same way. Cause when he's talking to, his Rasta man and he tells him to go upstairs and he's going to the bathroom, but because she stops, because she's following him, but she noticed that he's stopping because he's talking to his boy, so she's got to stop. She can't follow him too close. And he's walking towards the bathroom, and I'm like, he knows he knows she's he knows she's there, and then it's playing out, and I'm like, son of a bitch, I'm good. But it's one of those things where this recent time, some of it played out as if it was new to me, or just I completely, because I remember the beats, I remember the end, and I remember so many of the, I really remember Danny Aiello. I remember, Moses Stansfield, but the small quiet moments, I seem to have just lost over time. And so it was nice watching this without me waiting for something to happen and anticipating the next scene and, you know, nudging my wife, telling her, okay, watch this scene. I was watching it, a lot of it, as if it's just been something I hadn't seen in years, or in some cases, watching it for the first time.
Sure. You know, that's one of the things that I'm really struck by films, and I really like watching films that I haven't seen in, you know, 5-10 years, because you can only remember so much, right? You know, I watch a lot of movies. Most of them are only for this show, so it's not too much really now, because the times are limited with the little one. But it, you know, through the films that we watch for the regular themes and then for the Podshot episodes, it's a lot of movies, and it's a lot of comic books, and it's a lot of novels, and it's just a lot of stuff to consume. All right. And so you can only remember so much. And so I remember watching this, and I'm like, oh yeah, Leon, I know what this, I remember this. And certain scenes come up, and I'm like, oh shit, I don't remember this at all. You know? And it's like, oh, this is awesome. Like, I don't, you know, like, I know where it's going to end up, but I don't remember how it got there.
Right.
And, you know, and especially with Gary Oldman, like, I remember his big scenes and like we mentioned, the Bring Me Everyone and the Beethoven thing, but I forgot about the second time with the drugs and the whole bathroom scene. Like, I was pretty blind about it. Like, I didn't remember much of it. And then when I was watching it, it all just kind of came back right when I saw him, you know, walk out from behind the door. And then I just sat there, just clenched fist, when he pulls the gun out and points it at her, and then points it at the Rastafarian. And I just sat there, and I'm like, oh shit. Like, he's just one of the most dangerous bad guys that I remember seeing in a long time. You know, to where his body count isn't huge. It's like 4 or 5 people. But he's just so on the edge of sane, it seems like, to where it really keeps me guessing.
But that's the other thing. It's 4 or 5 people as far as...
Yeah,
these 90 minutes, 110 minutes. Yeah. Right, yeah. So we don't, we don't know how... I'm sure there's somebody somewhere for him to be able to move up the ranks to the position he's in. And he obviously has some pull, because he can bring in everyone.
Yeah.
And,
oh shit. Jeez.
I mean, it's like that whole block was closed down and surrounded by dudes in blue. And even, I'll be jumping ahead. So we'll keep it moving.
Sure. But so the next part was the code knock. That I really liked, right?
Which was right where I was going with
And
the dude, the SWAT team, it's like, okay, now you go look. It's like, wait, I thought you were all big boss there before, but now you're like, no, go ahead. You tell me what's out there. It's like, dude, really?
Go ahead, bro.
It's rough. I'm like, how you gonna do your man like that? But
I do like one of the technical things I like about it is when they initially do the knock and it's not right. Right.
Yeah.
And the code, did you know that the code is actually, the Manhattan, area code that they're tapping. That's another IMDb special there. Huh. But,
which one? 212-718?
I guess it just says, 212. Yep.
Okay. Yes. Then you're right. Yeah.
And so I like that. And what I think is so typical of many other films, and what I'm glad that they don't do in this, is when they tap a different code, you don't immediately then get a shot of Leon, and he's not like alert going, oh, what's going on? You know, you're allowed to not know where he is.
Yep.
And I think that ratchets up the tension so much, because you're like, oh shit, Did he hear it? Did he not hear it? He was on the bed. Maybe he fell asleep. He's not used to being on the bed. He was jumping about that. Maybe exactly. He's still there.
Exactly,
you
right.
And so maybe you don't he fell know. Asleep. Yep. Yeah, you don't know how the sequence is going to turn out. You can assume he's going to be fine, but you don't know exactly what's going to happen. And I think that's what's exciting about it. You know, it's like reading an episode or reading an issue of Spider-Man or the X-Men or whatever. You know that they're ultimately going to be fine, but it's a matter of, oh, I'm not exactly sure how it's going to get there. And that's what's fun about it. So yeah, I really like how he, you know, he brings in this entire team and he says, you know, I told you to get the guy, not destroy the building or whatever he says. I think that that's interesting. He, you know, then we have the sequence where they're having their final sort of discussion, Matilda and Leon, and he's getting her down this air conditioner, this HVAC, right? Is what it is. Like this,
Yeah, I mean, it had the fan and yeah, it was a huge ass. It's basically how they would heat the apartment.
Yeah. And so he's sending her down there and they have this teary goodbye. And I always wonder this in the end of films when they have their big goodbyes and their big sort of final speech, is he saying exactly what she needs to hear at the moment, right?
I think she
needs to hear that he loves her. She needs to hear where she needs to go to get the things that she needs to survive. But it always makes me wonder, is that just super convenient? Or is he still not sure of what it is that he feels for this girl that's probably 20 plus years younger than him? Or, you know, is he actually feeling those feelings, or is he just saying that to her? Or,
yeah.
You know, and whether it's one way or the other, it doesn't really matter for me. It just matters that it's there and I can think about it. You know?
I think that he's telling her what she needs to hear to get out of there. If he told her the truth, she ain't leaving. He knows his time is up, and he may have at one point, when it was all happening, thought, this is it. I'm not leaving this building. I'm not getting out of here. But then he had the opportunity to, and it was close. It really looked like one of those things. You know, part of me wonders if they did the whole test screening. Did people be like, oh, great. You know, no, he needs to leave.
I got something for you here, Dad.
All right. But it's, I really think that, him putting her in the air shaft and getting her, that was just that he knew, he may not have known it was going to be their last time seeing each other, but he said what he had to say to get her out of there. He cares for her, but I mean, everything he said, I don't believe he believed everything he was saying.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think that that's, you know, I also think that it's mostly for the audience too. I think that it's as much for her as it is for the audience, because the audience is like, oh, that makes me feel so good. He's come full circle, you know? And then again, it's like, ooh, he's come, ooh, like he is in love with her. Like that kind of makes me feel like gross. Like, you know, because and then you can rationalize it and like, oh, well, he thinks of her as like a daughter, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's a thing where in a lot of films, like your Titanics, right? Like, you have this final speech and it's like, oh, goodbye, I love you, whatever. And that's the end. And that character dies. But I think in this case, he's just saying it for her. I think that he's saying it so, like you said, she'll get away and that she can go on with her life. I don't think that even in his stunted state that he's truly believing what he's saying. Because I don't know that either he's capable of that still, or I don't know, like, if he's able to make his way out, does that mean they're going to be a couple? Right? I mean, he said he's in love with her. That means they're going to be a couple, or, you know, that sort of thing, you know, reading into it a little bit more makes me feel like, I don't know if I like going down that road so much. So we get to his escape, and I love the fact that Luc Besson does not try to trick the audience. You are aware really quickly that it's him in the police mask that he's, you know, he's doing the Trojan horse thing on how to get out.
Yeah.
And I like that as opposed to him, you know, outmaneuvering 200 plus SWAT guys or DEA guys or whatever they are. So I like that idea that we're aware of it's him. And I also am aware, or I also like that Stansfield is aware of the fact that it is him. And instead of just screaming and yelling like you would assume he would do, right? He's kind of an unhinged guy. But instead he slow plays a little bit. And he clears out that, that either like a garage or I don't know what exactly it is, but he clears out that area and just waits for Leon to come to him.
That was the, that's some apartment buildings have a basement entrance and some have really long passageways. The apartment building I lived in Mount Vernon had a back entrance and that was where, you went downstairs. It's where, the laundry room was. It's where some of the apartments had, extra storage in a basement. Another access to the elevator. So it was, it wasn't a garage. It was another entrance to the building. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I figured it was going to be some fancy New York thing, you know.
Yeah, we don't have basements that where I am. So
that's right. So we have the final showdown, right? And we have two.
But yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm not dismissing what you're saying. It's kind of hard for it to be a showdown when you're taken out by getting shot in the back.
That's right. He gets taken out by being shot in the back. I love the way that the camera sort of flares a little bit.
Yes, yes.
It overexposes for just a touch. And again, I think this is a really strong area of the score. I really like that. And, you know, you're very aware of what's going on without having to see it. And I think that they do that really well earlier in the movie when the 4 or 5 year old is killed and they don't have to show you that.
I really thought when I first saw it, and this was something that came back to me watching it a few weeks ago, I thought that he got away and the bright flash was basically the scene ending. And then, I mean, not that we were going to see the next scene, him in a field with Matilda, but I just thought that bright flash was the end of that scene and we were going to open to them free and
that it was going to be a little Gladiator style.
And I realized once the camera starts tilting and falling back, I was like, that motherfucker just got shot.
Yep. He just gets shot. I love the fact that, and here's me being an English teacher, right? And reading into it, but I love the fact that he is in this dark corridor and he's walking to the bright light, right? It's symbolizing him before when he's just this killing machine and he's walking or becoming more than that and entering this sort of new bright world with Matilda. With what the emotions and the, sort of maturity that being with her has brought out to him. Because it's the same sort of idea. And he gets almost to the end, almost to that point where he's just like everyone else and functional, and then he's shot down. And I really like that. I mean, I'm mostly a pessimist to begin with, and so I really like the idea of, oh, yeah, fuck it. You know, it didn't work out. And that's just through watching so many movies where I think a lot of them are just cheesy bullshit endings just to appease the audience, right? And so when a film actually tries to go for more and doesn't give us the bow, I really tend to appreciate that. But what the original ending was in the script is Stansfield shoots him, he dies, and then Matilda shows up and she plays the ring trick on Stansfield.
Oh.
And all three of them die. And that's the end. And Bassan changed it because he didn't want the film to be about Matilda being a juvenile killer.
Right.
Like he didn't feel like that was the arc of the character. And so he changed it to where she gets away and goes to the school and returns to the school and you know, has her little back and forth with the headmistress.
Just tell me the truth. Oh, just, yeah. No,
yeah. I love the way she delivers that, too, by the way. I think that that's really good. And you know, then we have more of the symbolism with the planting of the roots and her staying there. And
which, of course, my wife has to shoot down because my wife, being a where we live now, loving plants and gardening and flowers, basically told me that plant's not going to take root there. And it's you just killed the plant. There's no reason for that. So I was like, well, there you go. That's great. So it works. It completely works for the movie then, because everybody dies. So great.
Yeah, that's right. I could just imagine Renee being like, oh, well, that shit's going to die.
Yeah, it's like me watching, you know, Fled or The Net. It's like, wow, that's just some bullshit.
Or a Scorpion.
Computer stuff. Or Scorpion.
That's not that. So, you should have just said, oh, Jason, you're pretty.
I like it. My friends like shit they like.
That's right. So, I thought that was good, again, for the symbolism. I think that it is interesting if it wouldn't have worked. I like that reading as well. Because it's like, maybe Matilda gets there and she can't handle it. You know, she can't back it. She's got the skills to kill people, you know, and that was always a thing where, you know, in the little fanfic, it was her with a knife, right? Because that's what it says is that's the.
So did you basically, did you write La Femme Nikita? Is that where this is going?
Yeah. Okay. All right. It was essentially 12-year-old La Femme Nikita, which, and then I'm like, oh shit, he already made that movie 4 years ago.
Damn it. And, what are we going to do?
And Jean Reno is in that, and that's where Leon came from. Well, fuck.
All right.
There, I blew that.
That's
better. Get back to the Star Trek.
There we go.
Better get back to that Riker shit. So, yeah, so that's how that went. So, but I, you know, this is one of the movies where I had been on your case for a while about, oh, we need to see Leon. And it was a thing where I was telling my girlfriend, I was like, well, shit, you know, I keep bugging David about this, but I haven't seen this movie in probably like 5 to 10 years. So I was like, so I hope I enjoy it. You know, it's like I bought the Blu-ray. I had to unwrap the Blu-ray to watch it yesterday. So it's a thing where it's just sitting on the shelf wrapped up. And I'm like, man, I haven't seen this in a while. I hope I, you know, still feel the same way about it, because I'll watch some films by, I think Kevin Smith is probably the biggest, the person that I've changed the most on, to where when I first saw his films, I thought they were hilarious and I really enjoyed it. Now I watch it and I find a lot of them to be pretty tedious. So I'm like, oh, okay, it's the same patter. It's the same banter. It's the same style of everything.
Everything ends
the same way. And it just gets repetitive and I just get over it. But so I was watching, when I was watching this, I was glad to see, like I'd mentioned earlier, that I was clenching my fists and I was into it. And my girlfriend watched it and was very, you know, nervous, because I could tell that she could feel that it wasn't a traditional film, that it wasn't going along the lines of a traditional Hollywood picture, to where there were surprises. You didn't know what Stansfield was going to do. You didn't know what the relationship was going to be like between the two of them. And it was uncomfortable at times. And so I was really, relieved, I guess, a little bit, but I was really glad that we did this film, because it's one that I really, really do enjoy. So, Mr. Price, is there anything else that you want to say about Leon before we wrap this one up?
It will probably be a while before I do watch it again.
Sure.
I was telling the minion at work that, I have to find out if he has a list of movies. He's allergic to black and white movies, and I'm
Double Indemnity. That's a good
one. I'm getting that. I didn't give him The Thin Man. I think I gave him Return of the Thin Man, because the first one might be a little rough because it is very grainy. It is, it's an early movie, but, I want him to enjoy the chemistry between Powell and Loy.
Mildred Pierce is also a good one.
There's Mildred Pierce. There's The Big Sleep and, yes. To Have and Have Not. So, I mean, he has some newer movies also. And, I did tell him, I think he saw Heat, with Pacino and De Niro. So one of them is Leon, and I don't remember if he said he watched it, but if he, I'll ask him again this week. And if, when I go back to work, I'll bring in the Blu-ray if he hasn't, but it's a movie that I'd still recommend. I mean, Besson has done some movies that I recall fine. I mean, The Fifth Element is one of my favorite movies.
Interesting.
I can watch even when it's edited on like Sci-Fi or any other station. I'll usually, if I'm in the kitchen cooking or doing dishes or something and nothing else is on, I'll keep that on. I do enjoy that movie a lot.
I think that really hinges on what people think and if they can take Chris Tucker.
Because which I can.
He's in it so little, but he is, like, I know people that think he is very funny, and then I know people that just cannot stand him.
I would love for him to actually not rely on Jackie Chan to make a movie.
He must just be living off those checks.
I mean, and Renee's a fan. I think I only saw Friday once, but I mean, I really enjoy Rush Hour. Second one, not so much. The third one's just horrible. Mm-hmm. I really do. And yes, he's only in it towards the end, but he basically makes up for lost time and he crams so much. He is so over the top in a little bit, but that's the character. That's
sure.
I mean, he's this radio host, his personality, and so it's fitting. I mean, and Luke Perry's in this movie, for God's sake. So,
you know, it's a thing where it makes a big difference knowing that he is a personality as opposed to a movie that is very bad, like the Stallone Judge Dredd, where Rob Schneider is just a jerk off. God, right? Like, he's just a jerk off. Like, he's not anybody.
No, yeah.
And so I think it makes a lot more sense to where if you're going to have a very broad comedian, at least make him be somebody in the movie.
Yeah.
It's not just a regular guy. Like, he's that for a reason. Like, he's like a, you know, like a Howard Stern or like a, you know, somebody like that. That's a heightened personality.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I mean, I mentioned The Transporter, which sadly is a PG-13 movie and it could have been such a better movie, if it was rated R, but I know Besson is attached to that.
Yeah, he's made some really strange choices in films.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, there's no, and he may have the people that Gary Oldman was in Leon and he was in Fifth Element.
Yeah.
You know, so he's got the people that he likes to work with. And of course, you know, I'll see his name and he's not like the Wachowski siblings now where I kind of cringe or
squint. Oh, come on now, Dap.
And I see what kind of movies they're making. I'm like, well,
that Jupiter Ascending, we're going to do a special show on that.
I hadn't heard about that until today. We saw the trailer before Battle of the Five Armies.
Yeah, you did.
And I was like, hey, that's May Griffin from the Simpsons, from Family Guy. But it's I'm coming around. I was telling Jason this the other day. I've come around recently on dudes like Channing Tatum.
Yes.
Like Leo, Franco. There are a couple dudes who I used to watch and I'd just be like, or I wouldn't watch because they were like, I thought Channing Tatum was like the worst thing about G.I. Joe.
He's really good in the Steven Soderbergh film Haywire, where he just kind of plays like I can't be bothered, but he's like a hitman.
Oh, okay.
He's just playing it. He's in like one scene.
Oh, is that's the UFC chick?
Yeah.
Okay.
With Gina Carano.
That's it, right?
And she, you know, that's, I don't know. I kind of like that movie. A lot of people think that she's terrible. I think she's pretty good for what she's being. Like, she would be a really good you know, like a Wonder Woman style.
Okay.
Because she's just, you know, got like thick legs and just looks like, I mean, obviously she could kick people's asses, right?
Nice.
And I think that she just looks good in sort of her physicality is good, I guess. She's not much of an actress, but you know, she's not trying to be in that movie either. And she beats the shit out of Antonio Banderas and Michael Fassbender and
Channing Tatum,
and so, and Michael Douglas is in it. So,
But it's but they when it with Tatum, because I was watching 21 Jump Street, and I thought that was pretty damn entertaining. But then I'll find, you know, that he's in a movie that's not science fiction where he's supposed to be playing a doctor. And I'm like, I really can't suspend my disbelief enough for this guy to be a doctor. But it's,
in Sideways. Is that right?
No. Wasn't it with, I think, it was either Rachel McAdams. It was not The Vow. Was it The Vow?
The Vow. Sure.
Okay, yeah, one of those.
I was thinking of Side Effects, by the way, which
which I haven't seen that either.
He's a parolee. He's nothing like a doctor in that.
Oh, damn.
But anyway, that was about, you know, pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
And that's a good movie, actually. I think that's still streaming on Netflix.
The Jude Law's in that too, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very good at that, yeah.
Okay. We did watch, as speaking of Jude Law, we saw Grand Budapest Hotel last night.
You know, what's interesting is by the time this comes out, this will people will already have heard this. But as of recording, we are doing in January and February a movies we missed theme. And so it's all the movies that me and Rachel and we're going to have special guests of Rachel's little sister as well as Anel, my girlfriend. The four of us are going to be on and talking about movies that we missed in 2014 that we wanted to see. And the Grand Budapest Hotel is definitely going to be one of them.
That's cool. We enjoyed that. It was really good. Yeah. And we did. We also watched The Interview this weekend, which was – I enjoyed a lot.
Oh, did you really? Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. Yeah. It wasn't as one-sided as I expected it to be. And it's – I liked it. I'll probably watch it again, but I've come around on a lot of actors recently. I'll see if Besson is attached to a movie. It'll
at least give it a look. Curiosity. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, he's got some strange ones. Okay. Because, you know, we mentioned Nikita and that's kind of his big breakout. That was in 1990. Then Leon was his next one. While he was waiting for Bruce Willis's schedule to clear up to do The Fifth Element.
Okay.
And so he did Leon in 94, The Fifth Element in 97, and then The Messenger, the story of Joan of Arc, which he also...
Which I didn't want to see.
Which he is, which is fairly well known. It's got a terrible poster, and I thought, I see it a lot, and I'm like, that looks awful. and that, you know, sadly used to sway me quite a bit back in the day. And so then he took 6 years off before making Angel A, which I've never heard of. And then he started making some animated films. He started making Arthur and the Invisibles. And so he made that as well as the sequel to that and the third film of that. And then he made, The Extraordinary Adventures of Adele Blonsec. He made that in 2010, and then he made The Lady, The Family, and this year's Lucy with Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, I was just going to see.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. I heard mixed reviews about it, to where that may or may not be on our movies that we missed episode. So we'll see. Somebody over here that's looking at me may get overruled, and if that's going to be one of the films included or not. So we'll see. So, Mr. Price. Do you have anything else before we close out?
I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. If you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about specifically for this show, for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have a Facebook page for the show where you could like it. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, you can head over to Amazon.com and search for our wish list. It's full of the movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies. If you're in the giving mood, just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So I do want to thank Mr. David A. Price for coming on and discussing Leon with me. If people wanted to hear more from you, they could check out our previous discussions on the 2009 reboot of Star Trek, as well as The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring with the aforementioned Mr. Ben Teed. But if people wanted to hear more from you or get in contact with you specifically, where could they do so?
Oh, man. 11 O'Clock Comics is the podcast I do every week with my brothers, Jason and Vince. 1111oclockcomics.com is the website. There's also Marvel Noise, which comes out every other week. That is something that I put together along with my friend Steve Raker, and Kevin and a bunch of folks that, basically sit around and send me segments that I get to put together. Nice. And the listeners can enjoy that way. I am on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. 11 O'Clock Comics has a Facebook page. So does Marvel Noise. You can also find me on Instagram. So that's pretty much my, social media presence.
And we're going to get one of your co-hosts, Mr. Vince B, who joined us for the Godzilla discussion, and he will be joining us again in about a month or so after this releases on a discussion about Pan's Labyrinth.
Ooh.
That we'll be doing soon, so people could look forward to that. So anyway, so thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.
As a meditation, and those he plays never suspect. He doesn't play for the money he wins. He doesn't play for respect. He deals the cards to find the answer, the sacred geometry of chance, law of a probable outcome. The numbers lead a dance. I know that the spades are the swords of a soldier. I know that the clubs are weapons of war. I know that diamonds mean money for this art. That's not the shape of my heart. He may play the jack of diamonds. He may lay the queen of spades. He may conceal a king in his hand while a memory of it fades. That the spades are the swords of a soldier. I know that the clubs are weapons of war. I know that diamonds mean money for this art. But that's not the shape of my heart. That's not the shape. There's something wrong. I'm not a man with too many faces. The mask I wear is one. For those who speak know nothing and find out to their cost, like those who curse their luck. Those who fear are lost. the swords of a soldier. I know that the clubs are weapons of war. I know that diamonds mean money for this art, but that's not the shape of my heart. That's not the shape of my heart. That's not the shape of my heart.